Welcome to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly. This podcast is presented in the context of our Sunday morning service. We hope you enjoy this presentation.
Well, fall is, I think it's officially here. I would say it's officially here. How many of you like fall? You like the changing seasons? You know, I like the changing seasons. I could handle 2 weeks of fall, 2 days of winter, 2 weeks of spring, and give me summer the rest of the year, you know. I like the trees. I like to go up in the mountains and look at them. My wife loves that, and she likes the spring flowers and all that kind of thing. And, yeah, I can take a little bit of that, but, hey, just give me summer. Give me the warm weather, and I would be great for that. How many of you, fall is your favorite season? Okay. How about winter? All right. Spring. I think spring's the winner so far. How about summer? Some of you are raising two hands, so it made it look like mine. I think it's between spring and summer here that are the favorite seasons. And let me ask you a couple more questions, okay? How many of you like a paycheck? Now, I thought I'd get almost every hand. Some of you aren't raising your hands. I'm going to contact your bosses and let them know that you'll work for free. You know, you don't like a paycheck. How about this? How many of you like filling your tags during hunting season? Yeah, that's okay. Not a lot of hunters in the house today because everyone is out hunting, trying to fill their tags. How many of you that like to go couponing or yard sale, like to find a great deal, even get something for free or little or nothing? You like that? Yeah. Okay, now what if you did those things, you went to work and you never received a paycheck? If you went hunting and you were guaranteed you would never get anything, if you went yard sailing or rummaging or couponing and you never got a good deal, how many of you would keep working? Nobody. You'd get a different job. How many of you would keep hunting if you knew you'd never get anything? No, you'd say they're one person. How many would keep yard sailing? Garage selling, if you never found a good deal, if you keep couponing, you take all that time. No, I see the hands going down. There's not many people who would do that. Why? Because we like results. We like to have something tangible, a reward for the time, for the energy, for the effort that we invest. If you're calling it in the seasons, okay, if we were calling this a season like a farmer would, you like the fall season, you like the harvest season. I don't think a lot of you would like to get into farming if you knew you would never get a harvest. We love the harvest in our own lives, but what we fail to realize is that the harvest season, the fall season, comes at the end of the cycle. You first have to go through winter, spring, summer, and fall, and if you don't go through the previous three seasons properly, you'll never have a harvest. This morning, I want to talk to you about the seasons of life. Open your Bible to Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Ecclesiastes chapter 3. You see, what happens is that all of us like the fall, the harvest, but many of us don't stay planted in the season that God has us in at this time, and because of that, we don't experience a harvest. I first heard this teaching several years ago by John Maxwell when he was doing a leadership lesson, and it kind of was a whole new revelation to me because I realized so many times as I'm talking to people, they want the harvest, we want the harvest, we want the harvest, we want the results, we want a great marriage, we want a great family, I want a great life, I want a great this, a great career, a great that, a great ministry. But people aren't willing to put in what it takes, the work, the effort, and the energy through the other three seasons of life to reap the harvest, to reap the future, to reap the destiny that we all want for our lives. How many of you want a great future? For yourself, for your kids, for everything. Yeah. Then we need to properly steward the seasons that God gives us. It talks about the seasons. We see this concept of the seasons of life in Ecclesiastes 3, verse 1, 2, and 11. It says, to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant, a time to pluck what is planted. He has made everything beautiful in its own time. Just as there are four seasons in nature, there are four seasons in life, And we need to understand them and navigate them properly so that we can reap a harvest of what God wants for us. So if you're taking notes this morning, inside your bulletin, we have your life group homework. We have your right there on the front is, a sermon outline. The first season of life is the winter season, and winter is the season for planning. It's the season for planning. We see in Ecclesiastes 3, verse 2, it says, there's a time to be born, a time to be born, a time where it all starts. What people don't realize is that winter is really a birthing season. A lot of times winter seems like a bleak season. It seems barren. It seems dead. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of life. The trees, they're just sticks. They look like there's no life. But what people don't realize that it's in the winter season that the trees, they are accumulating resources and getting ready to start a whole brand new season. Winter is a beginning time. For those that are in farming, I grew up in southeastern South Dakota, right in the middle of farm country. I mean, we don't have tourism in southeastern South Dakota, okay? No one's going out and touring the bean fields. You know, this is a bean field. This is a corn field.
This is the pig farm, you know.
You don't do tourism. You farm. And so I really understand what farmers do. But, you know, a lot of times you think, man, farmers have it easy. They get a three-month vacation during the winter season. It would be great to be a farmer. Uh-uh. You don't get a break, okay? One, you've probably got livestock, so you're working with the livestock. You're feeding them the harvest that you brought in. You're selling the harvest to make profits so you can get ready for the next year. But something else you're also doing, it's dreaming. Winter is a time of dreaming in details. That's in your notes. It's a time of dreaming in details because the farmer is looking at the crops and he's saying, okay, this crop, soybeans are going to produce a really good profit for me this year. And so he's planning and he's dreaming and he's thinking, how much should I plant? What should I plant? Where should I plant it? Because you got to rotate your crops to get a good harvest. He's also thinking about, okay, what are the issues that I need to get ready for? Last year, we had problems with the planter. So I need to get the planter fixed. At the end of the season, the combine that was, we were bringing in the one of the last loads of corn, one of the last fields, the combine had some issues. It wasn't working properly. And so he is planning and getting everything set in order. He's ordering the seed so that when the springtime comes, when planting season comes, he has everything ready to go. And what people don't realize is that we need a time of planning in our own lives, in your family, for your marriage, in ministry. And I found in my own life, there's different times in the series of church. There's things we plan for and we go through the seasons. Then I start a new round of planning. There's always seasons going on in your life. And I throw this out to you. What is your dream for your life? What is your dream for your marriage? What's your dream for the family, your kids? What's your dream for the kingdom? What do you want to accomplish for God? If you knew you couldn't fail, if you knew money wasn't an object, what would you attempt for the kingdom? What are your dreams? You see, there are some people, they've never really dreamt for their life. They've never had a dream. And a dream is a preferred future of what you want to happen. They've never dreamed. It says, without a vision, without a dream, people perish. God wants you to have a dream. And you need to write those dreams out in detail. I've got some dreams for my life. I want to get a master's degree, but I'm waiting until my last child's done with school. And that's a dream I've had for years. So about 6-7 years from now, you'll probably see me going to get my master's degree. You know, there's different dreams that I have for my life, but write down your dreams. What do you want God to do? Neil Armstrong. How many know who Neil Armstrong was? First man on the moon, right? This is what he said. Ever since I was 12. How many 12-year-olds we have in here? I know my daughter's 12. How many of you are older than 12? Some are younger, okay. Ever since I was 12, I dreamed I would do something important in aviation. Wow. The man who walked on the moon, it started when he was 12 years old. He had a dream that fueled his life. Do you have a dream that fuels your life? An eternal dream, a divine dream that God has given you. Not saying something that you and I concoct in the flesh, but something as we wait upon God, as we're spending time with Him, we're saying, God, give me your dreams for my life, for the kingdom, for my family, for my kids. God, what do you want me to do? What do you want us to do? What do you want to accomplish? What is our dreams? I know I have dreams for our church. We shared a few weeks ago how we want to, in the next 5 to 10 years, plant churches in rural communities around Wyoming where they can't sustain a church on their own, that we send a community pastor to go in and to live there in the community and building bridges, touching the community, meeting needs, developing student ministries, kids ministries, small groups, hospitality ministries for the Sunday morning and for what's taking place. And then every Sunday, we're either streaming or sending our service in, our worship, because it could be hard in a small town of 800. I went to the funeral yesterday up in Cody. Went through the town of Meeteetse, 300 and some people. Went through Shoshone, town of 800 people. Guys, there's no vibrant churches in those communities. And my heart was just breaking, and I was thinking, God, they need to know you. How can they hear if there's no one there? We need to have lighthouses, churches in these community. And so we're streaming in our service, the worship, the awesome worship we get each week. They can experience that. They experience the message of Word of God. We want to plant churches around the state. Our food pantry, I tell you, God is exploding our food pantry. Our dream someday is to have a separate facility where we can have be open every day of the week, where our food pantry people don't have to tear down and set up the shelves and set the food out every day and rearrange tables. They don't have to go to the showers over here and drag out all the clothes and the furniture and the household items that they do every single Tuesday. Instead, we can have a facility, and I tell you, a nice facility. A classy facility, one that doesn't look like looks like a Kmart that's going out of business, okay? But one that gives dignity to people, and that they can come every day and they can receive food, they can receive free clothes, they can receive free furniture, free household items. We want to touch our community. And God is beginning to explode our food pantry, giving us more opportunities. Do you realize in July, we had 28 new families? 28. In August, 49 new families. And in September, another 49 new families. That's about 125 new families in the past 3 months. And the thing is, Barbara was telling me, Barbara Walters, our food pantry operator, is telling me that the past few weeks we've been running out of food. And we're going, what are we going to do? We have all these new people to feed. And she got a call from the food bank saying, you know what? The guy who is picking up all the food at the Walmarts, he's quitting. And we don't have the budget or the manpower to do that. Would you guys like to take over one of the Walmarts? Yeah. She said, yes, you bet. So now, every day, Monday through Friday, we're going to Walmart and picking up food. And I tell you, if you look at the screen this morning, we need volunteers because God has opened up stores for us and He's opened up opportunities. We need people to help with pickup at Walmart Monday through Friday. Food pickup from the food bank on Tuesdays and Fridays. From Loaf and Jug on Tuesdays and Fridays. From Target on Mondays. From Starbucks on Mondays and Fridays. Okay, that's just a food pickup. We need people here every day, Monday through Friday at 11 o'clock to unload the food we pick up, to sort it, we have to weigh it, and then put the food away. So we need people to help with that. We need people to set up the clothing and household items every Tuesday from 9 in the morning to noon. And then we need people to help with distributing the food on Tuesday from 11:30 to 6 p.m., and also people to write grants. And I tell you, God's just blowing up the food pantry, giving us opportunity to touch our community more, and it's so exciting. You know, we have, you may not realize this, but we have several freezers and refrigerators scattered around the church to try to house all the food. And one of the things, we want to get big walk-in coolers, big walk-in freezers so that we can store food, that we can have more food on hand and provide for them. Well, God has provided for us as a walk-in cooler, and it's going to be on the back corner of this building right out the door. I think we got some pictures. They were here this week, the guys were, and they were digging a trench and running the electricity. It's going to be about right in that area. It's going to go on the back corner of the building. You can see it. The trench is all filled in, so the electrical is there. We're going to be moving the cooler in, and so now we can store a ton of food. All that food we're getting from Walmart and Starbucks, Target, etc., we've got a place to put it. But friends, you see, that's part of the dream. And if you don't have a dream, you're not going to see a harvest. You're not going to see an impact in people's lives. So I ask you this morning, what is the dream for your life? Do you have a God-honoring, kingdom-building dream for yourself, for your spouse, for your family, for our church? Winter is not a time of deadness. It's a time of dreaming, of planning. Okay, the second season. What comes after winter? Spring. Okay, try it again. What comes after winter? Spring. Yes, spring comes. And spring is the season for preparation and planting. It's the season for preparation and planting. Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Chapter 3, verse 2 says there's a time to plant. But before the farmer plants, he has to prepare the field, and he does that by plowing up the hard ground. When I fell in love with Rebecca, and I began to realize this is becoming serious, okay? We're considering marriage. I started reading books about marriage, about being a good husband, and that kind of thing. Because for me, I didn't come from the best model of marriage, all right? I mean, my parents loved each other, were faithful to each other, but I knew that I wanted something more, and there was a lot of bad ground I had to plow up, a lot of bad ideas that I had to plow up in my life and get rid of and start planting new ideas of what does it mean to be a good husband. When we had kids, I was not ready for it, okay? When I found out my wife was pregnant 25 years ago, it's like, okay, I got to find some books on this. I got to find some resources on this. I mean, how do you parent? What do you do? Where do you start? And I'm just going to throw some resources out. If you're a new parent, Preparation for Parenting, Growing Kids God's Way, and then Dare to Discipline by Dr. Dobson. Those are three great resources. Preparation for Parenting, that deals with the first 6 months of your child's life. Oh, man, that was really helpful. Preparation for the Toddler Years, how many know the terrible twos? You need all the help you can get, huh? You know, and so I began to plant resources, plant things in my life. I began to prepare and get ready because I wanted a good harvest with my kids. And we need to be people that plant. Some people, yeah, I want a great marriage, but we won't do anything about it. We won't come to a marriage group. We won't read any marriage resources. We won't go to a marriage conference. You know, we want things, but are we willing to invest? If you have dreams, but you never plant anything, you're not going to reap anything. The Bible talks a lot about planting, the impact of planting the right things and planting them effectively. Job chapter 4. Verse 8, it says, even as I have seen, those who plow iniquity and sow trouble or plant trouble reap the same. 2 Corinthians 9:16, but this I say, he who sows sparingly will reap sparingly. He who sows bountifully will reap bountifully. Galatians chapter 6, verse 7 and 8, do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. The one who sows to please his sinful nature, from that nature will reap destruction. The one who sows to please the Spirit, from the Spirit will reap eternal life. We need to be people that are planting. The laws of the harvest, we have them for you in your notes. The first one is, you reap after you sow. You reap after you sow. You reap what you sow, and you reap more than you sow. People look at a successful marriage, and it didn't just happen. It's because that couple took time. They've invested in communicating, invested in resolving issues, instead of letting them mount up and never talking about them to one day where it gets to be so big that they can't deal with them anymore. They've invested time in going out on dates, writing each other notes, sending texts throughout the day. They're planting little seeds. They're investing each other. They'll go to a marriage class. They'll read books. They'll be praying for each other. They're planting spiritually. They're planting emotionally. They're planting physically, times of physical intimacy. And as they're planting, it produces a harvest. See, just as a great marriage doesn't happen overnight, a marriage just doesn't fall apart overnight. It's those little foxes that spoil the vine. I have put on 80 pounds since I've gotten married. If you would have told me 27 years ago you're going to gain 80 pounds, I would have said, no way. I didn't put it on overnight. I put it on over 27 years. 5 pounds here, lose 3. The next year you put on 5, you lose 3. The next year you put on 5, you lose 3. I tell you, when I hit 30, I gained 20 pounds. Nothing changed. I mean, metabolism changed. That was it. I mean, but there was one big jump, but the rest has been incrementally back and forth, and you don't realize it. Things don't just fall apart overnight. It's because you're planting either something good or something bad, and after you've planted a long time, you reap a harvest in that area. What are you planting? Are you sowing to the spirit or sowing to the flesh? In your marriage, your family, your personal life, your health, in your thought life, your media choices. Be people that plant the good things. Plant the good things. Okay, let's take a look at the third season of life. The third season of life is summer. And summer is the season for perspiration. You sweat. A little bit of sweat equity there. Ecclesiastes 3:2 says, there's a time to uproot. After the seed's been planted in the springtime, the farmer just doesn't kick back in his lazy boy and turn on ESPN. No. First, you're cultivating. If you don't know what a cultivator is, it's a machine you hook up to the back of the tractor, and there's blades, and you drive it through the rows, and it cultivates the soil. It does several things. Weeds that are growing there that will compete with the crop later on, it uproots them so that they won't grow. Also, it allows air. It aerates the soil. It allows air and moisture to get more to the roots so that will help it grow. So the farmers are cultivating. They're also irrigating. They're moving the irrigation system all over the field. And when they're done, they go back and they start all over. They're constantly watering. And then something else they're doing? Fertilizing. How many of you know what they use to fertilize fields? Dung, a pile of waste, poo-poo. How many know that manure stinks? Yeah. You see, here's the thing. It's the stink that causes it to grow. And you know what I found in my own life? Sometimes the stinkiest times of my life have been the biggest growth periods of my life. And so the thing is, when you're perspiring, when you are cultivating and you're digging stuff out, when you're watering with tears over prayer, when you're going through those tough times, when you're dealing with the stink, when you're dealing with the mess, don't give up. Don't give up. Summer, in your notes, is a time of effort and endurance. If the coming harvest is to be productive, we must sweat a lot in the summertime. It's a time to stir up what's been planted. And you endure long, hot, humid days. You endure the thunderstorms that damage your crop, the high winds, the hails, the long spells without rain. You endure all of that. And here's the thing. Most of the time in our lives, we do not have control over the storms of our life. We can't control what happens to us. Maybe there's a death of a loved one. Maybe there's a sickness, undeserved criticism or persecution. Maybe there is an unexpected job layoff or a wage cutback. These things, when they hit us, it can feel like a ton of bricks. And in this season, we can feel like, man, where is God? You ever have a dry time when you're praying and you don't hear from God? You don't sense him. You pick up the Bible and it's like read the newspaper. And how many know the newspaper isn't that encouraging? And yet there's these dry times. What do we do? You say, hey, here's the thing. You maybe can't control the things going on in your life, but you can control some things. What can you control? We have a list up on the screen for you. You can control what you do with much of your time. You can control the amount of effort you give to a task. You can control what you think about. You can control your attitude. You control your tongue. Control whom you choose as a mentor and those who will be closest to you. And how many know, you show me your friends, I'll show you your future. I say that to my kids all the time. You can choose your commitments. You can choose your response to a bad situation. And you can choose how you will respond to failure. Those are all things that you can control. So as a result, when you're going through the drought, when you're dealing with the stink, when you're up to your knees in the mess, don't quit, don't give up, because the harvest is the next season. The harvest is the next season. And that brings us to point number four, fall. Fall is the season for produce. Ecclesiastes 3:11a says, he has made everything beautiful in its own time. For some people, the fall season, the autumn season, is a time of regret. It's a time for watching the trees lose their leaves, and they have this sense of loss in their own life. It's a time of dreading another winter coming and wishing things could be different, and it's because they haven't been planting, they didn't endure. And when they come to a place in their life with their family or their ministry or the calling God's put on them, they feel like they've missed it, and they have. But for the person who has been planning and preparing and planting and persisting, the fall is a time of reaping, a time of rejoicing, a time of feeling a sense of accomplishment, a time of gratitude to God for all that he's done for us. There was a man who once had four sons, and he wanted his sons to learn not to judge things too quick, so he sent each of them on a trip, and in turn, to go look at a pear tree that was a long distance away. Each son made the trip, though, at a different season of the year. The first son went in the winter time, and he went in the winter, next one went in the spring, next one came in the summer, next one came in the fall. And after they had all made their trip, the father says, I want you to take notes on your observations of the pear tree. When they come back at the end of the fall season, he brings his four sons together, and he asks each one, what did you see? The son who went in the wintertime said, it was ugly, it was bent, it was twisted, it was barren. The second son said, no, it wasn't. It was covered with green buds and full of promise. The third said, no, that wasn't the pear tree I saw. He said it was laden with blossoms that smelled so sweet and looked so beautiful. It was the most graceful thing he had ever seen. And the fourth son says, you are all wrong. He said, it was ripe and drooping with fruit, full of life and fulfillment. And the father explained to his sons that they were all right because they had only seen but one season in the life of the tree. He told them that you cannot judge a tree or a person or a situation by only one season. And the essence of who you are, the pleasure or joy, the love that comes from life can only be measured at the end, not by a tiny restricted season. Let me ask you this morning, are you discouraged by the season that you're in right now? Do you feel that it's bleak? It's winter, and there is no hope. Have you planted, and maybe something washed out all the seed, and you feel like, why even try? Maybe some of you are in that drought, that summertime. You don't sense anything from God, or your life is a mess. It stinks right now. You're dealing with a lot of junk. The Apostle Paul wrote this to the Galatian church. He said, "Let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart." I read a story one time of a couple who worked as missionaries for Wycliffe Bible Translators for 30 years in the country of Guatemala, and they almost single-handedly translated the entire Bible into the main language of the largest indigenous people group in the country of Guatemala. Now, that was a tough task, but what was even tougher is that this people group did not have even a writing system. It was all verbal. So they had to create the alphabet and the phonetics and the writing, the orthography for it, and then they had to teach that to the people so they could learn it, and then they had to translate the Bible into that and then give them the Bible and see them saved and disciple them. I mean, that's a pretty daunting task when you've got to create the alphabet and the written language of the people group. They've never written it down. It's just been all verbal. And the thing was, when they first started in ministry, they hadn't been there very long. When they first moved there, they moved into a small village to immerse themselves in the culture so they could learn it. And the village witch doctor told everyone, leave them alone, don't befriend them, have no contact. It took them 2 years before they gained their first friend who would teach them the language. Could you do that? Could you go to some remote location, no modern conveniences, no running water, you know, no electricity, live in those conditions, and everyone's against you, no one even wants to be your friend? Could you even live like that for 2 years? But they did it, and they finally got their first friend. They're excited. Things are starting to grow, and then they get a letter from their home church. Their home church was the full support for them. The denomination they were in was different from the Assemblies of God, where we don't have one church fully support a missionary. Instead, our missionaries, you can see in the backboard, our missionaries are supported by a lot of churches, and one of the big reasons is for the example of this story. But the home church got a new pastor, and the pastor sent them a letter saying, hey, we are examining all of our missionary endeavors right now, and we want to make sure we're sending our money to the places that are producing the best results. So we need to know how many people you've seen saved in the past year, and we're going to be allocating your missions dollars according to the amount of people that have been saved. What could they do? You know, not going to lie, I was 100 people. They told the truth. Hey, we've been here 2 years. We finally made our first friend. They shared everything. And you know what the church did? Church completely dropped them, lost all support. They got so discouraged, they contemplated coming home. But they knew that was the dream God had given them. They knew that's where God wanted them to be. Other people heard their plight, began to send them money, and they stayed. And 30 years later, there are now churches and pastors and thousands of Christians, hundreds of churches, thousands of Christians, hundreds of pastors all over Guatemala because that couple kept faithful in the seasons of life and it produced a harvest. Let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we don't lose heart. You know what the due season is? It's God's season. It's when God knows this is the right time. And I'll tell you, most of the time, I think God's right time is not right. I think it should be a whole lot earlier. But he knows the right season, the right time for us to reap that harvest. We mustn't let our discouragement or our weariness blind us to the fact that God's due time is coming, that he is faithful, he is good, he is loving, and we will reap if we're faithful.
You have been listening to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly in Casper, Wyoming. For more information, please email us CasperFaith@gmail.com or call us at 307-265-9121. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation of Casper Faith Assembly, where relationships matter most.